Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna signing in live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual epicenter of the universe. Good morning, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory. You're tuned to Thursday Live on Radio Sai's Asia Stream. I hope you enjoyed the morning Vedam and Bhajans that came to you live from the Sai Kulwant Hall till just a few moments ago. We are now back at the Prashanthi Digital Studios of Radio Sai, and the time here right now is exactly 37 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Thank you for your company on this glorious Thursday morning, March the 19th, 2015. As we speak, the scene in the Sai Kulwant Hall is one of deep serenity and stillness. The morning Mangal Arati has just concluded and devotees are quietly lined up on their way to the blessed shrine that is the holy Mahasannidhi of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. At Radio Sai, we pray that may Bhagwan's grace emanating from that holy spot fill your day with health, happiness, with divine guidance and protection. And dear listeners, before I forget, please note that the ashram's evening bhajan schedule has already shifted to summer timing. This means that Vedam begins at 5 p.m., not 4:30, so it begins at 5 p.m. for 45 minutes. At 5:45, the evening bhajan starts and concludes with the Mangal Arati at 6:30 p.m. So basically the evening program in the mandir is from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. In this hour and a half, we have 45 minutes of Vedam chanting and 45 minutes of bhajan singing. By the way, have you ever been to Prashanthi Nilayam in late March? Years ago, it used to be quite hot at this time of the year. But for the past several years, the weather in Prashanthi has been very kind and is kinder than the seasonal temperatures you would expect at this time of the year. For example, in the evenings, through the night and to the morning, it's quite breezy, pleasant, with temperatures in the low to mid-20s only. Daytime skies are clear blue with practically zero pollution, making our air quality excellent. The weather is crisp and warm for most part of the day. The daytime highs are in the mid-30s, that is in Celsius, thankfully. That is because if it was not Celsius, we would be somewhere near the North Pole because 30 Fahrenheit would take us close to 0 degrees Celsius. Shiver, shiver, like the Americans in northeast part of North America right now. So no way, Jose. The sun is happily shining in Prashanthi Nilayam, and we are grateful for that. And on that very sunshiny note, let's begin Morning Glory with another mega dose of inspiration in the form of two stellar interviews that I have lined up for you. Firstly, today we conclude the ongoing six-part Tris with Divinity with Professor M. Nanjundaya. One day, history will view this conversation as a saga of pure love, a Bhagavatam that spoke of the Lord's glories, His mysteries, His simplicity all at once. This conversation will be followed by my colleague, Brother Bishop Rushti's Fleeting Moments interview with Sai University alumnus, Mr. Venugopal. Now, today's conversation is the third installment of this ongoing interview that Bishu keeps having with Mr. Venugopal from time to time. So, let's put the show on the road with the conclusion of my six-part Tris with Divinity interview with the very mellow and very mature Professor M. Nanjundaya. Dear listeners, it is time to brace yourselves for the next hour and a quarter of Morning Glory coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, the seat of supreme beauty, ultimate truth, and all things auspicious. Please enjoy.
Very interesting. So all this must, these close encounters, continuous interaction with Swami, the ability to translate his discourses, this must have led to a lot of practical learning.
Oh, yes, oh, yes. Practical learning very much. See, many a time, our literal knowing, that is the meaning of the literal meaning of what he says,
mm-hmm.
we think that we have understood and we are following, which is not true. I have learnt a number of times, he will be talking about things which have special reference to me and relevance to me, but they are applicable to all people. So, quite a few things like that.
For example, what?
Yes, for example, Swami would say, people think that Sai Baba would be happy if people give their time or their attention, as if I want their time and their attention. They do part-time service and expect full-time salary. They must give their heart fully to me. Then they can expect that kind of attention from me. For example, people go on drawing upon my kindness. They ask, Swami, I want this, I want this. I grant. When I grant, sometimes it amounts to exhausting the merits of their activity. Suddenly, there may not be response from me. I am always perfect. I will never lapse or never falter anywhere. And people should know that Swami doesn't want anything. And many a time, if they are clever people, they think that Swami is putting these things very cleverly. I speak only truth. I never speak anything which is untrue. But I may focus sometimes on certain points and sometimes to certain other points. Why should there be this kind of contradictions in Swami? For example, Swami speaks to people who do not have such good reputation. And Swami said, well, I do it because I have come for them.
For example, throughout Swami's life, we saw him give a lot of attention to Indian politicians.
Yes.
And we have never seen anything good come out of them.
Yes. But then Swami says that if I change them, so much of change, so much of good can be done to the society. So my efforts are when they come with love, when they are in a mood to receive, if they don't receive, I don't regret. My job is to give. My job is to show them the way. Whether they follow, if they follow, they benefit. If they don't follow, there is no harm. But certainly there will be an improvement. At that point of time, they may not realize. It starts working in them.
Like a subtle transformation.
Yes, subtle transformation
inside.
Will be taking place. Mm-hmm. And they develop gratitude to me. And that gratitude turns into devotion. So I do it. And another thing is, one of the reasons as to why I have come down is to be a refuge for people who do not have anyone to support them, people who are helplessly caught up in the cycle of birth and death. For example, buddhi karmanusarini. Our intelligence works always according to the deeds which we have done. If in the previous birth we have done evil deeds, in this birth the mind goes towards the evil deeds only because of that habit which has become a samskara, which has become character and destiny. Now such people find helpless. Whom to turn to? Who will help them?
Because they have this compulsion, this tendency towards negative.
They realize the family suffers on account of such things. They also suffer. So suddenly they realize, but they want to change. They cannot give up. They have become victims. They have become addicted to things. So once they come and say, నీ వాడని ఒక పరియన ఏవాడైన ఏమి ఏలుదు అని, హూ ఎవర్ హీ బీ, ఇఫ్ యూ వర్ టు కమ్ అండ్ ఫాల్ అట్ మై ఫీట్ అండ్ సే స్వామి ఐఎమ్ యువర్స్, ఐ హావ్ సరెండర్డ్ మై సెల్ఫ్, ప్లీజ్ సేవ్ మీ, ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ టు హిజ్ ఎలిజిబిలిటీ, ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ టు హిజ్ క్వాలిఫికేషన్స్, ఐ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ టు హిజ్ బ్యాంక్ బ్యాలెన్స్, I just accept him on the basis of his surrendering to me. And it is one of my avataric duties. Among avataric duties, to save any person who is caught up in the vicious circle of evil thinking, evil doing, and evil samskaras, evil character, evil destiny, again that prompts him to do evil things. So he has said that. And he has said, prayer is a very powerful thing. How many times I have translated for that? For example, true devotion is to maintain equanimity, which comes once he transcends the stage of duality. But one need not be afraid of he's not having equanimity. He should start doing. You need not say, I don't have that equanimity.
So, if I may interrupt here, earlier you said that Swami said, when we do a little bit of seva, we accumulate some good karma, then we ask him, we force him, you know, do something for me, and we exhaust that bank balance. After that, he may or may not respond because we have run out of the balance.
Yes.
And then he also said that, regardless of whether we have a balance or not,
yes,
if we seek refuge in his lotus feet,
yes,
he's not going to check our bank balance or eligibility.
Yes.
He will rescue us.
Yes.
So these are two slightly divergent narratives.
No, the thing is, it depends upon the prayer. It depends upon, suppose you don't have any balance.
Yes.
For the first time you are coming, somehow it occurs to you that he will rescue you.
Mm.
You surrender to him.
So surrender is the key.
Yes, surrender is the key. Intensity is a very important thing. Surrender is the key. Manasyekam, vachasyekam, karmanyekam, these are the three important things. What I mean is,
with mind,
yes,
body,
your
and
thought, word and deed must
surrender.
Be the same. Thought, word and deed must be the same. Genuinely you should surrender. You should not be pretense. You should not be business. You should not be half-hearted.
Okay, then you also spoke of, Swami said we should have equanimity.
Yes.
Now, sometimes in life you deal with very irksome people. Either they don't share your vision or your thought process, or they're at a very different vibrational level.
Yes, yes.
And they only seem to bring difficulties or irritations into your life.
Yes.
How do you remain equanimous in the presence of such people?
See, here equanimity is not forcing ourselves to be kind to a person who is not good. That's good enough. If you can control your mind and accept the evil of the other person, go a little out of the way and help him, that's good as far as you can. But real equanimity is transcending the pull of this dvaita. It is a very high level kind of devotion. That is, almost you are a gnani. Your stability, mental stability, is not temporary. You have realized soul. And nothing can, your vision is pure. Your new vision is perfect.
But then you can't, then if you are in such a state at that level, and you see atrocities or adharma happening around you, if you don't react to it, again, you're not following the law, isn't it?
It is correct. You have to, for example, Bhishma in the court, when such injustice was done to Pandavas, when he kept quiet, that was a sin. But then, he is not that, he doesn't have equanimity in the sense that Swami uses the word. Equanimity is samatvam. Samatvam comes only when you can see one God all around. You don't see the bodies. It is a vast sheet of divinity. You see only divine. It is an experience more than thing. So once you reach a stage wherein this Dvaita to Advaita, Advaita means seeing the same Atma in all people, seeing Swami in all people, these are all very, very difficult things for a beginner. That's why Swami doesn't speak about these things very elaborately, but suggestively he tells and he goes by. People, yes.
I'm just curious to know, in the Mahabharata, what should Bhishma have done?
Bhishma should have protested.
But then he was not practicing equanimity.
That is the reason why he should have protested. If he was keeping quiet.
Protesting would have been equivalent to equanimity?
No. Protesting is appropriate to a person who has not reached a stage of equanimity.
Oh, I see.
Equanimity is a stage beyond that.
So what does a person of equanimity see? He sees that, let the wrongdoer do what he's doing because his karma will catch up with him. But what if you're a victim of their wrongdoing?
No, the thing is, when we are in Dvaita, we have to observe certain rules. We have to discharge our duties. Indifference is not detachment.
Well said, yes.
You see, if you say, let anything happen, why does it matter, it is not happening to me, it is not detachment. It is realizing oneness. And in that atmic spirit, it is the mind functioning. So it is a very difficult stage as such. I am not able to just say, what I say is at least this much. That as a person now, even at the cost of being mistaken, or even at the cost of being held responsible, being put to difficulties and troubles, I must discharge my duties. This is Dvaita. It is only a gnani like Shuka who has reached that stage.
So if you are at the state of Advaita, then what would you do in face of all these things?
Advaita, you see something like a drama. It's not real happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something like a dream. See, your dream is not real. Once you are awakened, you realize, you laugh at that particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, similarly, from the worldly stage, a stage of awakening wherein you have realized, that becomes awakening. That is, this is a dream, this is a daydream. When will the daydream stop? When will the night dream stop? Night dream stops once you are awakened from the sleep. Daydream stops once you are awakened into realizing the reality. And once you do that, then you can do it, but still with the same, your dream is continuing. And you cannot imagine yourself to be out of dream, out of sleep. That is where Swami is, the most important function of Swami is Guru, Sadguru, Prabodha. Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam, he said, every day thrice we say, O Narayana Narayana, Om Satya Narayana Narayana, Jai Sadguru Deva, Guru Charanam Buddha. That is, even in Suprabhatam we say, Mangalam Guru Devaya, Mangalam Gnanadayine. Because the greatest thing which Swami can do is to save us from the ignorance, to remove the darkness. Death is sweeter than, Swami says, the darkness of ignorance. Ignorance is so powerful. It's catching us. But it is possible. The whole journey, the whole drama, worldly drama, is carried on because of this sleep, this dream, it continues. I don't know how.
Very interesting. A lot of food for thought there.
Yes. So Swami would say in his discourses, most of the time, he is interested in acting, practicing rather than listening, appreciating, things like that. I have seen Swami's discourse is over. He goes into the drawing room. Students and others surround him. One person is overwhelmed by the subtleties of the philosophy and spirituality which he has brought about in his discourse. He is a competent person. He praises Swami. But Swami says, simple, practice. You must practice. Because he is not practicing.
Hmm. It's one thing to appreciate it at an intellectual level, I guess.
Yes, yes.
Another to actually internalize
yes, yes,
it.
Yes.
That's the hard part.
Yes. See, he, not understanding even intellectually is much inferior to understanding intellectually.
I understand.
But understanding intellectually is not the end of the journey. From there, it must become a deep conviction. The conviction must be so deep that even if any person pushes you into the fire, you will come back and say, I'm going to die. How can I put my hand into the fire? So spontaneous implementing Swami's commands, Swami's sayings, Swami's teachings is the ultimate proof of you are having understood it. But Swami doesn't expect overnight that. Swami has infinite patience. Infinite patience. And all that is required is from the heart, if you feel and say anything, however wrong, however unacceptable, however, you know, defective, he has patience. He may not agree with you for all your lies, for all your wrong path, but then he has patience. He knows how to lift you to a next higher stage.
But there were times when we observed that people who were close to him and moving very in his physical proximity, Swami would at least feign that he was upset with them.
Yes. I'll tell you one thing. With Swami, this human aspect and the divine aspect,
yes, how do you,
are two very, very powerful things which can confuse us, which can confound, and which can sometimes even make us fall. For example, there were some students of mine. Swami would not encourage people to grow long hair, etc. There was one student of mine who was very close to Swami. Swami would not ask him to cut his hair. He will allow that. This is a small example I am telling. So suppose I am a corrupt fellow. I am carrying on my corruption. But I come to Swami, serve Swami, I love Swami and all that. For Swami that is sufficient. Your love is sufficient. You carry on your corruption.
How can you say that? The person is living a life of adharma.
Not adharma. Swami will save you. But he has patience.
What if you don't change? You want both. You want to have the ability to sit in the veranda.
But this cannot continue. There is a time given. Some adjustment time is given. At the appropriate level, he lifts you up.
Or you fall off the bandwagon.
Afterwards, he will not talk to you. That's all. He will say it is a waste. My investment is not getting rewards. Swami is one of the best investors. He is one of the wonderful marketing man. His salesmanship and his this kind of thing. So he would not waste. The thing that is where, it is one-to-one with Swami. One-to-one with Swami. You cannot understand all the aspects of Swami.
Yes, and especially the one that you mentioned, one size didn't fit all. For example, somebody could get away with long hair, although Swami was very particular that gentlemen should have well-trimmed hair.
Yes.
But somebody else could have the license to grow ponytail also.
Yes, that's where. See, human nature is to compare. We always say that fellow is doing like this fellow is doing like that. See, one IAS officer's daughter cut her hair. Swami went for darshan. He saw. Swami became very angry with him. He said, has your daughter become a widow? Why should she cut the hair? But so many people, Swami will be speaking so profusely, so lovingly, and he gives so much of attention.
To ladies with short hair also.
Short hair also. So what I am telling is, you see, one to one you have to take, Swami. And if you don't understand, the only way to understand it is by your own straining, by your own putting it into your mind and your intellect and doing it. But not accepting anyone, accepting Swami. The correct meaning, correct state he will understand. Now, I don't understand, but I think that I am wrong. I am feeling desperate. have patience. Have faith in Swami. Swami will save you. However wicked you are not beyond Swami's capacity to save. But what should we have? Patience. Cling on. Cling on. Cling on. One of the greatest things which one should remember is to cling on to the lotus feet at any cost. The real devotion is that. That kind of unwavering thing. You are not a fair weather friend. Your commitment is not that kind of thing. As long, oh, Swami has given me Amrutam, Swami has done this, done that, when things are going on. When Swami lifts you and puts you into a higher class, wherein different tests come, and you are not able to read, what is Swami is not looking after? One IAS person was telling me, when I was the chief secretary, when I came, Swami would spend so much of time with us, but now I have joined here. I am serving for the past 2 years. Swami even doesn't look at me sometime. See, at what stage what is good is Swami knows. At what stage you are, what is good for you. So, one should never be in a hurry to draw conclusions. This is the context in which Swami told me, Nannu artham cheskone daniki prayatnam cheyavaddu. Don't try to understand me. Enjoy experience. Enjoy and experience can come only when you have faith, unwavering faith. You can have unwavering faith only if you have patience. And faith builds itself. Faith gives you experience, sustains you. Otherwise it is very difficult. Many a time we are in a hurry.
But you talk of faith being so critical to spiritual progress.
Yes.
Now that also has to come from God, because what comes first? It's like the chicken or the egg. Do you make the effort to develop faith, or does God have to bestow you with it?
No, it is a very, not such a simple straight answer cannot be given. Mm. For example,
yes,
X has done so many mistakes. Consequently, he is suffering. His suffering wants some relief. He comes to Swami for relief. And he gets relief. He develops that kind of thing that Swami is really God, otherwise how would he? Then that gratitude becomes faith.
But there are some people, and there are millions to come, who would never have had direct contact with Swami to have developed, okay, I came with the problem, Swami solved it, he cured the cancer, he, you know, gave me a child I didn't have or whatever, and that's how he's God and I developed the faith. Or my business started to progress because Swami gave me some guidance. Now, apart from that, there are people who come to him as seekers, and
yes,
they are looking for faith.
Yes.
What's a good starting point, in your opinion?
See, that seeker has reached a particular stage. Otherwise, he would never be a seeker. Seeker, if he is seeking wealth, if he is seeking relief, he is arthi, artharthi, jignas. Jignas, we are telling. A seeker is one who knows already, who has got some basic things with him. And therefore, he has that faith. He might not have faith in X, he might not have faith in Swami. He has faith in himself, his own intellectual power, his own understanding. And once that conforms, then there will be so much. For example, I came to Swami more as a seeker. I have Bhagavad Gita and Swami's discourses, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's Gospel of Ramakrishna, conformity with these things, all these things have helped me.
Hmm.
But then, so this is how it goes.
Sir, in the aftermath of the Mahasamadhi, lot of devotees really miss Swami's physical form, because we had an attachment to the form, we have interacted with him in the body. He was so beautiful to behold. How can we not miss it, actually, some people ask. And they're experiencing a void within them. Now, to fulfill this void, we notice a lot of people continue to come to Prashanti Nilayam, but they also are visiting a lot of other spiritual spots and holy men and women to sort of find some sort of relief to their pain, because, you know, when you touch the feet of a holy person, you feel, okay, I've touched Swami's feet, or you interact with the holy person. What would you say to these people who are now attending all these various spiritual camps and meditation programs at various locations, at other spiritual religious places?
My immediate first reaction is that the depth of their faith in Swami was very much less. And they go on shifting. One person digs the well, 6 feet, no water, no water here, goes to another 6 feet. But there is a third person who digs 12 feet in the same place, he gets it. That's why faith is not the thing which is an article of bargaining and business. Faith is giving, that's all.
And trusting, I guess.
To complete trust. Faith and trust, patience, these are very, very intimately connected. Patience sustains faith. If you don't have patience, what type of faith is it if, well, nothing happened to me, I have prayed to Swami, I kept Ra, Swami gives in the discourses, Rama's photo was kept, Krishna's photo was kept, no response, and ultimately the Agarvati, it was going towards the
altar
where Devi was there. And this kind of Swami tells all these things.
It's all figment of the mind.
It is, exactly. Mind is absolute Mahishasura. And it can simply do havoc.
Mm-hmm.
That is where faith comes to your rescue. Once you have faith in Swami, and once you say that whatever happens for my good, this has come from Swami. My faith is only in one word, that is, nothing is beyond me. Everything is under my control. Everything happens by my will. And nothing will I do which is not good for you. Whatever happens to you, happens for your good. Have patience. Bear with me. And you will realize that it will be for your good. Patience is required. Now if you say, no, I cannot wait here, I will go to some other guru, you may. You may get some relief also. I don't talk adversely against them. Not my business. But I will certainly say they are unfortunate ones. And they are missing a golden opportunity of getting some light.
The ones who are hopping gurus all the time.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Sir, by the way, do you miss the form?
I miss, but I feel his presence so much. It is an experience. It's not a thing that Vibhuti has come or Kumkum has come or Swami has appeared in my room. Not that kind of thing. At every stage, every minute, I get guidance.
Mm-hmm. What kind of internally prompting, intuition?
Internally prompting.
Did you dream of him?
Huh?
Did you dream of him after Mahasamadhi?
Yes, number of dreams, but then nothing so startling, etc., that kind of thing. But when I go to, I open a book, I get him. You mean to say that I would have spoken here but for his grace? Believe me, that is absolutely 100% his grace, which has made me do my serious work, serious thinking about all these things. So that is how he takes care. I have been given some work. I have not been included in any trust as a very important person. That is not required for me. He knows what he has to give me.
Mm-hmm.
And number of times all these things melt away. I cry like a child when I see in Sai Kulwanthal certain functions, certain bhajans are sung, certain devotees coming and taking photograph along with Mahasamadhi. And some primary students, etc., showing to the chair what they have done.
The cards, so beautiful.
Yeah. See, he is there. What, we don't see him? I am having my cat tracked. Swami told me, the iron filing feels that this magnet doesn't have power at all. Dust and rust is there. Remove the dust and rust. Have the patience. Until then, prayer is your birthright. Pray. You don't pray. You don't look to certain things which are available to you. But you say that this is not available, that is not available. This is all not correct.
Mm-hmm. Sir, are you a contented man?
Yes, I am contented man. I get a number of problems, very mundane.
How do you process them in light of your contentment? Do they disturb you?
No, I just say, Swami is there, Swami will take care of me. I go on acting and Swami helps me. Swami is helpful like that. Regarding the illness of some members of my family. or regarding the marriage or regarding such things. And so I know that Swami in a convincing way, not to rationalize helplessness. Many a time our mind plays tricks.
Yes, yes.
And it gives a reason, and we based upon that reason we accept. Later on it takes away that reason itself. It reveals another thing. So I should not depend upon that. In a convincing way, Swami tells me He has been taking care of me. Fantastic, He has taken care of me.
Have you ever wondered if you had not, when you were teaching at a prestigious premier college in Bangalore, and you sought to give all that up and come and live in Whitefield, you were seeking even a part-time position. Have you ever wondered if you hadn't made that call, where your life would have been?
My life would have never been anywhere comparable to the one that I have, because now the greatest thing that I have, the greatest thing that Swami has given me, is that I am basically divine. I do not know at this point all that. I am still under the spell of this Dvaita and Maya. But it may take time. But I definitely know that now, when the problems become crisis, I realize that's all a passing show. He's not a kind of rationalized. The difference, it looks the same as a person who is rationalizing it. But with me, I enjoy peace at heart. There is restlessness for the other person.
You don't have moments of anxiety.
No, no, no. Whatever happens, I say, Swami, you have done it. First thing. Second thing is, you have done it for my good. I know, whether I know, I don't know, I accept it, Swami. And things prove the right. My faith like that has proved right.
So, if Bhagwan was physically here at this moment,
yes,
what would you say to him?
I enjoy. There is nothing excepting joy. Nothing to ask. Nothing, no explanation. I never ask, why have you gone? I never ask, you are 96 years, but you have gone. I never said that you have given up all of us and you have gone. Never. I enjoy. He is with me.
What about this whole industry? There's a whole big school of thought that keeps talking about Bhagwan's return in the same body. What do you think of, what do you make of all that?
Yes. No, I have my own thing. I say, this is my answer. Nothing is impossible for Swami. And He is always perfect. If He wants to come, He will come. And if He is in His understanding, if that is necessary, He will do it. Otherwise, He will not do it. If He does it, I feel delighted. If He doesn't do it, I don't feel disappointed. Because my faith in Swami is total. Whatever He does, he when He says, I am perfect, 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 yes, He is always perfect. When He says, I am love, love is my form and all that, this is not simply some kind of exciting, emotional kind of thing. He is love, and love has infinite patience, and always does good, never expects anything from you, not even thanks, not even recognition. I know, I have enjoyed that kind of thing from Swami. How can I say no?
So this has been extremely inspiring, enlightening, listening to you, sir. So if I know this is asking for, this is a tough call, but if you just had to have one or two maybe brief messages, your final thoughts for the listeners of Radio Sai, what would they be?
My kind of suggestions or what I would like to mention that way is, have faith in Swami. He will never, never give you up. You will never, never be poorer by that. You will be most fortunate if you have that faith in Swami. Don't be in a haste. Hurry never works with Swami. Have complete patience with Swami. Patience and faith if you have. And love. Love is a very big word. And true love for Swami, not expecting anything. Whatever He gives is good. Whatever He doesn't do is good. This is all that I say. And I thank, of course, Bhagavan who has really made this possible. And my prayer to Bhagavan was, Swami, let the listeners have greater faith in you and let it give them some kind of enlightenment, show light in their journey towards your lotus feet. It should not be boring, should not be hurting, it should not be kind of straining them, but still they should have some kind of light also. Swami, this was my prayer. So I pray to Swami and I thank Swami. I thank you. You have been so nice in making me come out. And I must thank you, Karuna. You are more like a daughter, Sahira.
Pleasure, sir, having you. And thank you for the precious life lessons and very soul-edifying messages that you have given us. I have learned so much by just sitting across from you. I'm sure our listeners are going to find a lot of answers, lot of guidance, lot of light from what you have told us. These are reminders we need from time to time. And when they come from a person who speaks from a place of conviction, they carry a lot of weight. So I thank you profusely for sparing us your time.
Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, sir.
Tune in to Sight. Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is exactly 17 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 19th of March, 2015. You just heard the final part of my 6-part Tryst with Divinity conversation with Professor M. Nanjundaya. We eagerly look forward to your feedback to this rare gem of an insight into the close relationship that this blessed devotee, Professor Nanjundaya, enjoyed with the avatar, Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba. Moving along, or before I move along, let me remind you, you can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. And now it's time for me to play for you part 3 of Mr. Venugopal's Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with my colleague, Brother Bishu Prushti. Earlier I had played first 2 parts of this conversation, and later Bishu had an opportunity to sit down for taking it further. So today what I'm bringing you is part 3 and hopefully next week part 4. So have a listen, please. Fleeting Moments with Brother Venugopal in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Bishu Prushti.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. And today, we are here to continue our conversation with Brother Venugopal B. from Hyderabad. Brother Venugopal joined Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in the year 2002 for his Master's in Business Administration. Earlier, he had done his engineering in Osmania University, Hyderabad. And once he graduated from Bhagwan's University in 2004, he went back to Hyderabad and he promptly joined the Hyderabad youth group of which he was a part before joining Bhagwan's college. And in the last episode, he shared about his journey to Bhagwan in terms of how that faith in his divinity got instilled in him, how his parents were drawn to Swami, and slowly, as a teenager, how he got so interested in Bhagwan's messages to start with, how you're so passionate about reading the Sathya Sai speaks, and then slowly he started unraveling the amazing phenomenon that Bhagwan is and what he means to him in his life, and then how he slowly started applying his teachings in his life. And all this was happening even before he became a student of Bhagwan's university. As a member of the Hyderabad Sai Youth Group, he has had innumerable interactions with Bhagwan. In fact, I think those were some of his life-defining moments. And some of these moments is what he shared last time. And today, he is here with us again. Thank you so much, Venu, for coming, for Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories once again.
Thank you, Bishu. It's a pleasure to be back here.
So, tell us, I think I should keep it open, because I remember last time you brought out many beautiful instances of your interaction with Bhagwan, where, you know, through those moments you got lessons of life which are useful not only to you at that point in time, they were very useful to you, but which have stayed in your mind not only because of what they have done to you, but because what they can do potentially to every youngster who is, you know, beginning to know Swamis, who's on the same path that you were once, trying to understand the phenomenon. So I will leave it to you to what you want to share from, you know, this beautiful journey you have had. It could be from the time you became a devotee in terms of beginning to have that faith in Bhagwan, you know, your Hyderabad youth days to becoming a student. So pick any of those moments and share those amazing life lessons that you have learned from Bhagwan.
Sure. So I think the last time our conversation kind of touched upon some of the key messages that Bhagwan had given to youth, and I think we also spoke about how I got inducted into the Hyderabad youth group. Yes. And how I came to know of the youth team and started to attend some of the service activities with them. So one of the things that really totally charged me up was to see this band of youngsters who, I mean, anywhere else in the city you would see a group of youngsters coming together to maybe visit a pub or go to a disco or go watch a movie or something like that. But here was this group of young men fully charged with love for Bhagwan and wanting to do something to impress Swami in their own way, go to a village, do something there. They were, I remember in the days that I had just started going with the youth group, we even had an occasion where we went to the Chanchalguda jail. Mm-hmm. In Hyderabad. And I was wondering why, I mean, the senior brothers were planning all of this, so I was relatively new to the youth team as such. And then I was wondering, why on earth are we even going to a jail to do seva? And we went to the jail and gave fruits to the jail inmates. Some of them were tied up with chains, and some of them were yelling at us, abusing us. And yet there were these brothers who were, you know, with a smile. With a smile they were giving oranges and all that. It all seemed very, very different to me. How is it that these guys are even doing this? I mean, why on earth would you want to visit a jail? And then we did a bhajan there. And one of the senior brothers told me that this same place, this jail, they had visited once earlier, and they had asked the jail inmates to write letters since they were going to Bhagwan. And the reason why although I was not part of the team which went to Bhagwan, the reason why I'm talking about this incident is because this really hit me hard. I mean, the experience that they had. So what happened was, they had asked these very jail inmates to write letters to Bhagwan, and because they were about to visit Prashant Nilayam after having done a series of bhajans and, you know, some activity in the jail. And all the jail inmates apparently wrote letters to Bhagwan. And all those letters were collected, and the Hyderabad youth team came to Prashant Nilayam, and Swami called them for a group interview. And the first thing Swami asked as soon as they all sat inside was, where are the letters?
Wow.
And the letters got passed to Bhagwan, and Bhagwan actually spent the first 10 minutes of the interview reading some of the letters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and what Swami said was, it seems he said, Papam vaallu kuda teliyaka tappulu chesi anubhavistunnaru, which means poor guys, they've done mistakes without understanding the repercussions or consequences, and today they are facing the consequence of that. And Swami was, it seems his eyes, tears welled up into his eyes, were moist. And those were not the days when Swami would, you know, emote so easily, but the feeling that Swami had for even, you know, people who otherwise are ostracized by the society was something that really made me feel, here is somebody who loves all of humanity. I mean, there is no distinction that he has between, because I was in that jail and I was feeling uncomfortable. I asked one of the senior brothers, why are we even doing this here? And then he narrated this incident to me, and that the entire discomfort in me vanished by when he told me of this experience. And that's when I realized that when Swami says love all, serve all, the all really means all. It is not only certain sections of the society or anything like that. So that kind of, and what really inspired me a lot at that time was to see this youth team so energized, so charged. In fact, one of the visits I remember, that those days there was no train to Prashantanilayam, so we used to all come by bus. And one of the visits, as soon as we landed in Prashantanilayam, we reached Prashantanilayam, I saw most of the brothers almost weeping with joy that they're back in Prashantanilayam and they can get to see Swami. And I was wondering, I am the only guy who is not so devoted here. And I was like, okay, let's see what happens. And then slowly.
So when did this happen?
This was around 1998. Around that time.
The reason I asked is because I was reading Satyamsham Sundaram, part 2, couple of days ago, and there are very beautiful accounts of how Bhagwan had gone to, had Bhagwan had responded to so many jail inmates. You know, there is that Kalpagiri incident, you know,
yeah,
of
this yes,
person
yes.
who
got transformed.
And Bhagwan asked him to own up his crime, and you know, he told, you be in the jail, and you know, with time you will get him reprieve, and that's what happens. He gets a presidential pardon and he comes out, and you know, but during the time he was in the jail, he used to always talk about Swami, and through him a lot of the other jail inmates came to know about Bhagwan, and they started writing letters to Swami, and Swami used to respond to their letters.
Wow.
So there are very, very beautiful accounts of how Swami has written letters, and you know, and their letters. It was a very moving account when I was reading all that.
That is what is so fantastic about Swami.
So this happened in the 60s, and yeah. I know this continues.
Yeah. What really was such an inspiring thing for me was that we have someone who we can see as, okay, here's someone who has stood up and is living all the ideals that so many others keep talking about, and serves as an example for us to follow. That, I think that was what first triggered, more than the miracles, more than all the stories, those I had heard from my childhood. But what really stood out for me was, here's Swami who actually lives his message and serves as an example for everyone to follow. And that was something really fantastic. That's how slowly I started to, you know, come with the youth team, and then there were some amazing experiences which came along the way. So there was one particular Gram Seva, I think it was in Karimnagar district, that we had attended, and I don't know if I've narrated this the last time, but we usually used to have this format of Grama Seva, meaning GRAMA CVA. We used to use that as an acronym to say G stands for Sing the Glory of God, so which is, as soon as you enter the village, do Nagar Sankirtan, chant the name of God and all that. And in the evening we used to conclude with Palaki Seva, which is again chanting the name of God.
So you take Bhagwan in a procession.
Yeah, in a procession, in a palanquin. And then R stands for Rural Leadership. So Swami used to always tell us that when you guys go to the villages, ensure that you are identifying who are the leaders among the youngsters there, who are the people who matter, who are the people to whom everyone else will listen, and then mold those guys, because then everybody else will fall in line. So encouraging rural leadership. So that's what R stood for. A stood for animal husbandry. So we used to do a lot of veterinary camps, because typically villages will have domesticated animals, and we fit that into the acronym, saying that, okay, this is what it should stand for. So all the veterinary camp stuff we do. M again stands for medical camp. So we used to take a team of doctors with us and also do medical check. All these activities used to happen simultaneously in the village on the same day. And then again the other A stood for agricultural services. So we used to take some of the agriculture experts. There were a couple of them on our team who would go there, do the soil test, advise the farmers on what kind of crops can be grown, and then of course all these activities then grew into bigger activities later. But those days, that's how we had started off: get them the best, better quality, advise them on the which kind of fertilizers to use for which crops and things like that. Because villagers typically would use anything for anything and destroy their own crops. S again stood for Shramaseva activity. So in the Seva, S-E-V-A, S stood for Shramdan activity. So whether it's digging a well, whether it's clearing the local, let's say if there's a pond in the local pond, and physically contributing in some way. Sometimes it could be resurrecting the temple. Most of these villages would have dilapidated temples and which needed, and I'll come to that.
So you work as a laborer and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was part of the Shramseva activity. In fact, to be honest, most of the youngsters enjoyed doing that more than anything else at that time, because it really would strain them. You know, I remember there was one particular Gram Seva where we had laid a road, and it took the whole day and night. And by the time the road was laid, everybody's hands were full of blisters because mowing so much of material up and down and all that. So we couldn't eat. So people couldn't even fold their hand to eat.
Oh my God.
And there was only one brother who was throughout distributing water to all the other 39-40 brothers through the day. And since everybody's hands had blisters, this one brother actually went and fed every one of the others.
Wow.
I mean, that was the kind of bonding and love, and you could feel Swami's love in all of this. And Swami was so happy every time. Those days, after every such activity, we would come to Parthi or Vrindavan, wherever Swami was, and Swami would invariably call us for an interview, or invariably bless us with namaskar or conversation. He would even sometimes walk into the center of the group, and all would be around him, even in the darshan area, and he would converse for 15-20 minutes outside. So those days were fantastic, and Swami would give a lot of directions and guidance. So coming back to the acronym part, so in the SEVA, then E stood for educational activity. So there used to be a few brothers who would call all the village kids, all the children in the village, and talk to them about health and hygiene, talk to them about values, and talk to them about some of these short stories throughout the day. So their job was that. And then we stood for value-based activity. So we used to typically, this was again Swami's idea and Swami's suggestion during one of the group interviews, where he said, you know, when you go to villages, all those villagers, they would have spent the whole day in the farm. Those days there was no TV and there was no other means of entertainment as such. So he would say that they spent the whole day in the farm, in the fields, and once they come back, you should also do either vinodam ki cheya, vinodam ga cheyali. You should also do something which is entertaining for them in the evening. And he used to say, andulo vinodamulo viluvalu. So he used to say, in the entertainment, you should inculcate values and tell them. So that is how we came up with these drama and some kind of cultural activity. So that brought out the cultural talents within the team. So there used to be one of the team members who would do a magic show. There was another team member who would do mime and mimicry. And through these media, we would talk about values. So through the magic show, he would do something like, okay, you know, here's, if there's a cigarette butt, and look at what it does to the cloth, and then, you know, you'll do some magic, and something he will do, and then he will see that if you don't, you know, the message would be that, okay, if you don't smoke cigarettes, then your lungs will be clean like this white kerchief, but if you smoke cigarettes, then it will become like this. Some such thing out of the work that they are doing, out of the display that they are doing. So even the mimicry guy would, you know, mimic some value-based scene out of one of the epics or something like that. So, and then finally there would be a drama, which was staged in front of Swami also, and I'll come to the drama in a bit, but the drama would be the grand finale, and that's how the cultural activity would go. And after doing all these, the last A would be after you do all these activities in the day, the last A is Ananda. So you get Ananda after you go through the entire GRA, MA, CVA, which is Grama Seva. So that's a beautiful way
to remember all that you have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. it kind of encapsulates all the activities that we would do. So while one of the Gram Sevas, and I was talking about the Karimnagar, one of the Gram Sevas that we were part of, there was this incident, and I remember it very, I was new, so I was just taking in everything that was coming at me. Any Gram Seva that I would attend, all these guys would look like angels to me. Everything would look like, wow, I'm in heaven, I'm in bliss kinds. And the beautiful incident that happened was that whilst we were there, it was around the rainy season. This was around July, if I remember correct. And when we went there, we finished the Palaki Seva. And the way we usually would do it is, whilst we are in the Palaki Seva, there would be a band of boys, a group of boys who would set up the stage for the cultural activity. And the Palaki would come and end near the stage, so that all the villagers would have joined the Palaki and they will come and sit in front of the stage, and then we can start the cultural activity. That day it was heavily overcast, and evening we thought it'll rain, it'll pour, and we didn't have any cover. So Swami used to also tell us that when you go to the villages, you cook for yourselves, don't be a burden on the villagers, so you cook for yourselves. So we used to have a cooking team also, so they
really a large team.
Yeah, absolutely. This is all within the 40 odd boys or 40-50 boys. Oh, that's boy. It so we used to have a cooking team. We used to take our vegetables and everything along, and during the day their job would be to ensure that all the guys will have their lunch, will have their breakfast, will have their lunch, and will have their dinner. And the eating was usually in the open, unless there is some bigger function hall kind of thing which the village has. But otherwise, usually that was the thing. And that day, I remember there was nothing. There was no such canopy or no such, even not even a shamiana tent or anything like that. So there was no way we could even eat dinner or even cook dinner if it starts to rain. And what's worse was that the stage would collapse if it rained, because it was a kind of a flimsy structure. And everything would be, your program would not, yeah. And typically what used to happen is, at the end of the day is when the main punch comes. So when the cultural activity happens, that's when the villagers see that, okay, these guys have come to our village. So the message that would go out in the cultural activity would be that, this is again Swami's message. Swami himself had said that to us in an interview, that when you go to the villages, you involve them in the work. It shouldn't be that you alone are working there and they are not coming forward. You involve them in the work together with the villagers, and before you leave, make them feel that, hey, we could have done this for our village ourselves, it's just that we didn't come together so far. So that message needs to go, and usually we would use this cultural activity to deliver that message, and that would be the punch. Why should some band of boys from Hyderabad come and do this? Could we not do it ourselves? So the drama would typically be that it would be a conversation between the villagers themselves, who will talk about this. And what happened was that day we were thinking of calling off the cultural part because it was heavily overcast. But since all the villagers were seated and they were expecting something, we had to start off. And then it started to drizzle. And the drizzle was like heavy drops, okay, heavy raindrops. And we knew that it's going to be a downpour. But look at what happened. One of the brothers got onto the stage. And I was really amazed at this guy's conviction. He got onto the stage. He told all the villagers on the mic that, see, if we all pray to Swami, he will let this cultural program happen. So let's sing a bhajan for Swami. And he started singing a bhajan, took a kanjira, started singing a bhajan. Everybody followed. The bhajan ended. The drizzle stopped. The cultural activity started off. Next 2.5 hours, the cultural activity went on without the rain. We finished the cultural activity, we had our dinner, the last guy got into the bus, and then it started pouring down. And I mean, I know it may sound like, okay, very, very, it's all maybe a coincidence, but incidents like this happened on such a regular basis. There was another incident where a particular village sarpanch, when we went there, and this was, I think, later, a couple of years after this one happened, around 2000 or something, when a village sarpanch actually, he was so overwhelmed with our activity and, you know, what we came and did for the village, that he offered to sponsor the lunch or dinner. I think it was the dinner. He wanted to offer the dinner for all the boys. And this is not a very well-to-do village. And this person, this sarpanch actually said that he will sponsor the dinner. And his daughter was to be married also. So there was some amount that he had kept aside. And he discovered when we went to the village that amount somebody has stolen.
Oh.
So he kind of lost that amount, but still, since he had already given his word, he didn't tell us all this. He told this to us later.
Mm-hmm.
But then since he had kept his word, he decided to continue and sponsor the dinner. And after a couple of days, he called our team leader and told him that, I want to tell you about an amazing incident which happened. That's when he told us that his money was stolen and this and that. And it seems after we left that day, in his altar, in his thingy, behind the picture that he had, God's picture that he had, behind that he found a bundle of notes, exactly the amount that was stolen.
Wow.
So, I mean, such incidents were... There were a lot many like this. I mean, there was these things were happening every time we would go. And Swami would also, whenever we would come back, Swami would also talk about some of these things in a subtle way. He would say that, I know I was there, I showed you my presence here, I showed you my presence there. And there was one incident, I don't know if I told you about this the last time, about Baba coming as a flash in a photograph.
No.
Okay, so what happened was that there was this group interview we had, and Swami had told us that when you go to the village and when you pray, I will come there. How will I come there? In car lo ranu, in bus lo ranu, in plane lo ranu, in train lo ranu, flash lo ostanu. He said, what it means is, I won't come in a bus or a car or a train or an aeroplane. I will come in a flash.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that a couple of months after that, when we had our Gram Seva, and somebody took photographs of the Pallaki procession, the palanquin procession in the evening, and across Swami's photo on the palanquin, the letters Baba in Telugu appeared as a flash.
Oh.
So this was, he literally kept his word in a sense, you know. This, so some of these incidents started to really make me think that, oh, there is greater power at work. And this was all before I had my own personal, first personal connection with Swami as such. So that was how it was when my journey started with the Hyderabad youth team. And as I saw more, some of these older brothers being so passionate about Seva, about the nation, about, you know, building the country, and at the same time pleasing Swami, I was really impressed with their you know, passion and vigor, and I felt I should be part of this movement, and I think that's what triggered it for me.
Wow. I mean, when you every time you go out and serve and you see something extraordinary, I think that will only change you. I think every time it was a revelation for you about who Swami is.
Absolutely. And I'm grateful to Swami in many ways, because I often felt that once I became a student, and I used to see this with, not to discredit any of the other students, but I used to see this with a lot of brothers who were students and had not seen this outside part of Swami, in the sense that they had not gone out there, all they were seeing was the physical Swami, and they wouldn't, they had no clue about what they were talking about. Not that I had any. I mean, nobody has. So I mean, in your introduction, you were talking about unraveling. I don't think anyone can ever unravel Swami in any sense of the term. I mean, even if somebody knows a little, it's still an infinitesimal part of what Swami actually is. But then I was grateful that made me realize the value of what I was getting as a student. Because when you know how Swami is working outside, and I'm sure you interview so many people, you should know better about how he does various things in various countries across continents. And I was grateful in a way that he brought me into the Sai youth first. He showed me the organization and the work and the amount of work that Swami is doing through all of these people first, and then brought me close as a student to see how an avatar actually lives and behaves. And that was living with God, being education was that part probably. But before that, knowing what you should learn when you get the opportunity was probably also important.
I think when you came, once you stepped in, you are very aware of where you're stepping in.
Yes. In fact, to be honest with you, Bishu, I didn't want to step in.
Oh, is it?
To be honest with you. So
this is strange. After having had so many experiences and knowing
so I was
what Swami is, at least to some extent, you didn't have the desire to join?
I didn't, actually. What happened was, I was so consumed with this whole service and the passion to serve and to be part of such a big movement, and I think probably Swami plugged me out of there because of that, maybe because he wanted me to understand that, you know, that sarva karma bhagavat prityartham, the bhagavat part was missing. So it was always becoming karma, and you know, you get into that cycle of, oh, I should do more and more good, but the offering to God and what is more important is God. So there was one conversation I had, and this was much, much later. I think I should share this here because I think it's an important piece, and I might forget it later because if I don't share it, I'll miss it. So there was one day when Swami asked me, what are you born for? Mm-hmm. I mean, no puttindi deni kosam, he asked. I didn't know what to say, so I said, Swami, for you. A typical response, right? So Swami, for you. No, not like that. And Swami gave me multiple choices. He said, "No, do any kosam puttevu? Double sampadinchadam kosam puttava." I will explain this in English again. But double sampadinchadam kosam puttava. Family in chusukodaniki puttava. Seva cheyadaniki puttava. Leka Swami cheppindi cheyadaniki puttava. So I was like, okay. Okay,
so
family.
He asked you what were you born for?
Yeah, so he asked me what are you born for? Are you born to earn money? Are you born to take care of your family? And this is where most people get stuck, right? Are you born are you born to serve, to do seva, or are you born to follow God's command? And I automatically said seva. Then Swami was like, he seemed unhappy. He said, no, let me ask you again. And then he repeated the same thing. Oh. Are you born for this or this? And then he stressed the last part. He said, Seva chedanki puttava, Swami yen chapte adi chedanki puttava. So are you born to do seva, or are you born to listen to what, or, you know, follow what Swami is saying? Then I realized that he actually wants that as the answer. And, and I said, Swami, to follow what Swami said. So Swami then immediately asked, supposing I tell you to stop doing seva from tomorrow, will you stop? I said, yes, Swami, obviously, if you command it that way. Then he said, see, that is why I was saying, again, I will ask you, what are you born for? Are you born for seva, or are you born for following what Swami says? And I said, yes, Swami, I'm born for following what Swami says. Then Swami said that, yes, that is the right answer. You should do what God commands you to do. To follow, the purpose of your life is to understand what God is wanting you to do. So not everyone is born to only do this, you know, do some. There are, like, for example, there are many people who Swami was, in another context, he was mentioning about various sages who spend years meditating in the Himalayas, and one of the devotees asked him about, you know, they are not doing anything for society. And then Swami said that is their seva, that is because they send out such positive vibrations. So you don't know who's doing what. They are doing what God expects them to do. That's what's important. So anyways, I think we've gone across the conversation into something else, but then that is the important part. And I think that is the reason why he probably plucked me out of the seva team, to make me understand that, you know, there is a greater thing behind all this seva. Seva is okay, but why should you do something, and how should you do it, with what attitude you should do it, was something I learned only after I became a student. So going back to the Gram Seva thing and all, there were so many other directions also that Swami had given us, and I was talking to you about the drama that that we presented in front of Swami. So the way it happened was that there was this, and again this is little more to do with the Hyderabad youth team as a whole and how much attention Swami gave to the team, because if he wouldn't have given that much encouragement, I don't think the team could have done what it did in terms of going to the villages and starting to do the kind of work
it continues to do.
And it continues to, yeah. So I think the motivation and the inspiration was all Swami. And obviously with the organization and the hierarchy, there were challenges, but because of Swami's encouragement that, you know, as a team, all of us could continue to work and work together. And Swami taught us so many subtle nuances of dealing with people, whether it is organization elders, whether it is other youngsters, whether it is people in the village. So Swami used to give such specific direction, and each time he would tell us something which we would have missed, and he would point out something which we had overlooked. And so one of the things with the drama thing was that when Swami had told us about this, do something for the entertainment of the villagers, and some of the boys in the team came up with a small street play.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this street play was, I mean, it was a simple conversation basically between three villagers, supposedly in the same village, who are wondering why this Hyderabad youth has come to their village and what are they doing here and what are they trying to do here, and then it kind of ends into the drama ends into saying that, you know, all of us should probably go to Prashant Nilayam and see this Satya Sai Baba once, because if he's inspired so many youngsters, it must be something, and we should all work together for the upliftment of our own village. So that storyline was what the drama was, but the drama was very humorously, I mean, the drama was well written, I should say. It used to be really fun to watch that drama, and a lot of the villagers would really enjoy it. We wanted to show this drama to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
But it was only a street play. There was just four characters in it. There was nothing like the drama that Swami is used to seeing. So we were wondering, how do we even propose this to Swami? So there was one occasion where Swami had called us for a group interview in the morning. And towards the end of the interview, one of the senior brothers mentioned to Swami that, Swami, we want to stage a drama in your presence. And Swami said, no, see, I don't have time. There are so many other people I have to talk to. And so then the senior brother was used to talking to Swami. And he said, Swami, it's not like that. We are, you know, showing this drama in the villages. If there are some mistakes, we don't want to portray Swami's message wrongly. So that is why we wanted you to see, because if there are some mistakes, you can correct us. Then some, oh, atlana, oh, is it like that? Then I will see, he said, okay, atle to chustanu. So in the afternoon, he sent prasadam and said, all of you can go. Now there was some dilemma. Swami said in the morning that he will see the drama. In the afternoon he is saying go. So what is he going to see the drama or not? So we sent a message into Purnachandra, and the brother who was staying there came back with a message saying, Swami saying he will see you guys in the afternoon. So in the afternoon darshan, Swami comes and behaves as though nothing, he didn't commit anything in the morning. So he was like, okay, when are you going and that. Then we said, Swami, drama. And Swami was like, drama? Ekkada chestaru? Ekkada, there's no place. Purnachandra is not ready. How can you do? Swami, anywhere. You tell us to do it here, we will do it here. It is a small street place, Swami. No, here. Those were not the days when dramas were done in Kulwant Hall at all. So this is, I'm talking about 97, 98. So Swami was, No, not here. Where will you do? Purnachandra is not ready. So one of the brothers from behind shouted, Swami Institute Auditorium. And Swami turned around and he was like, what? So because Institute Auditorium is meant for institute, and
yes,
you know, none of the outsiders can usually come and do a drama there. And then Swami said, Bhaga Matal Nature, you guys have learned how to talk. And then he called the people in charge of, you know, setting up the Institute Auditorium thing, and he instructed them to set it up. He actually came and saw the drama in the Institute Auditorium.
Wow.
And this, and what we were told at that time, and I don't know if it is fully correct, but some of the other people were saying that this is the first time that somebody from outside is doing a drama in the Institute Auditorium. And the Hyderabad youth team had that opportunity, and Swami actually enjoyed the drama and he suggested corrections in that. He took that interest because it was his message that was being given out. At the same time, he gave a wonderful opportunity to all the brothers and all of that. That was one beautiful incident about how the drama started being staged. And then after that, Swami had told us.
He saw the drama.
Yes, he saw the whole drama.
And he made some comments.
Yes, and he suggested a lot of corrections in the drama. So there were some portions where the dialogues were a little, you know, maybe you can say they were a little filmy or something like that, but and he did make a correction, and he was very happy. And then, in fact, Swami at the end of the drama, he said, "It's been a long time since I have laughed so much."
Oh.
He was literally holding his stomach and you know, laughing through the drama, so it was nice. And I also remember that Brother Satyajit was with Swami, and Swami was actually, I think Satyajit brother was probably new to Telugu or something. So Swami was, he was going on translating it for him through the drama. As the drama was progressing, Swami was telling him what the dialogues were and all that. So that was a very nice incident. And mostly Swami was interacting with Brother Srinivas from our team, so who is a senior brother, and he was, you know, the one who was interacting with Swami through this whole thing. So that was a nice, very, very, very beautiful opportunity that the Hyderabad youth team got. Another nice incident that the team I should share this probably, is because you know about this song, right? Sai Mata Biddalam. Sai Mata Biddalam Mandaram. So that song and the genesis of that song is what I wanted to talk about a little bit. So what happened was that this song was written by one of the brothers in our team, and we thought this time when Swami, because every time when Swami would call us for a group interview, he would generally ask us to sing some song or some bhajans or something. So this time we thought, let's sing this song. And this was morning, and Swami called us for a group interview, and Swami said, "Yavana Padandi," we sang this song. And Swami was so much in bliss, he actually stood and he became motionless, so to say. I mean, he was like, he closed his eyes and still, he was absolutely still. Even after the song ended, for like at least 30 seconds or something, he was still. And then he slowly opened his eyes and he said, "Chala bagundi bangaru, ee paatalo na jeevitam, na sandesham, na aashayam, anni imidi unnai."
Wow.
Which means my life, my message, and what I want should happen is all there in this one song, which is that Sai Mata Biddalam Andaram, Satya Sai Mata Biddalame Andaram. You know that song. I mean,
yes.
Students have sung it many times after that. So what happened after that was that Swami came out of the interview room and he asked the bhajan group, and I remember Brother Srinivaslu and some of the other singers were there, and Swami asked them, "Could you hear?" And he said, "Swami, we heard it very feebly because it was inside the interview room." So he called us again out and he made us sing it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he called some of the singers from the bhajan group and told them, "You learn this song from them and sing it the next time." And so they actually sat down, and after Swami left, they sat down and wrote the song, and that is how the Sai Mata Biddalam became a regular in Puttaparthi. But then the beauty of it was that the song, Swami told us that go to every district, go to every nook and corner of the state and sing this song. Because it has the message that I want to tell people. And Swami was very, very happy with that song being sung. And even I remember, even till the last few interactions that Swami had with the team, he would always ask for that song to be sung.
Wow.
So it was a song which he really liked.
And it was composed, written by one of the members of the youth.
Yes, it was written by one of the members of the youth. It was inspired by an RSS song, actually. There was a song with a similar tune, which was on the Desha Mata. And he just took the tune.
Patriotic song.
Yeah, patriotic song. And he took the tune and put these lyrics in, because Swami's message goes into it. So that was another beautiful opportunity, so to say, for the team as well.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Today is the 19th of March, 2015, and the time in Prashanthi Nilayam, India right now is exactly 11 a.m. Indian Standard Time. You just heard part 3 of a Fleeting Moments interview with Sai University alumnus Mr. Venugopal. He was in conversation with Radio Sai's Bishop Rushti. We look forward to your feedback by email. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. Up next, it's time for an engaging and informative and live from the studio study circle. Today we have four young men, wise beyond their years, participating in the Vahini series study circle. On the panel are Mr. Harishankar Bhatt of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, two research scholars from the Sai University, namely Mr. K. M. Ganesh and Mr. Sai Giridhar. And the study circle is moderated by Radio Sai's very own Mr. Bishop Rushti. Sounds very promising, and you're sure to enjoy it, and it's coming up shortly after this message. So please continue to stay tuned to Thursday Live till we meet next Thursday. And in the meanwhile, please be well, stay positive, and don't forget to smile. I'll see you again next Thursday. Till then, Jai Sai Ram. The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Satya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.